Hello, friend. When you or someone you love is diagnosed with OCD, it's like OCD becomes your new uninvited and unwelcome family member. Today, I'd like to share with you some common feelings that accompany this OCD visitation. I'll also share some ideas about how to manage them more effectively so that they serve you and not harm you. Welcome to the Free Me From OCD podcast. We're here to help you say yes to your life by saying no to the tyranny of OCD. Here you'll find information, tips, and tools to put you back in the driver's seat of your life by taking back your power from OCD. I'm Dr. Vicki Rackner, your host. I call in my experience as a mother of a son diagnosed with OCD when he was in college, physician and certified life coach to help you take back your life. Well, let's dive in. As always, let's begin our conversation with a story. Today, I'll share with you the many feelings I experienced as the mother of a child diagnosed with OCD. I also want to assure you that I have my son's permission to tell the story about how he came to be diagnosed with OCD and the twisted path to treatment. About a decade ago, when my son was in high school, he was passionate about sports. He wrestled and played lacrosse. When he was about 16, he got a back injury. He took a break from wrestling as he went through the rounds of physical therapy. Then he tried to wrestle through the pain, but ultimately he decided to give up on his dream of winning at the state level of competition. I saw some behavioral changes, but I chalked those up to the health challenges. One day he told me about this voice in his head telling him to do things. I was concerned enough that I called my pediatrician, who reassured me that there was nothing to worry about. My son left for college, and I noticed other strange things. One day he called me in a state of crisis. He said, "I borrowed a friend's car to help another friend move, and something really bad happened." I was panicky. I said, "Were you in an accident? Is everyone okay?" He assured me that nobody needed medical care. However, he thought somebody scratched the car in the parking lot when he wasn't there. What should he do? I asked him to send me a picture of the car. I saw a scratched up old beater. I asked my son again what happened. He said he just had a feeling that he did something wrong, maybe parked in the wrong spot, and the car was scratched. He called me several times for reassurances. While I advised against it, he confessed to the car owner, and I can only imagine what that car owner thought. Several weeks later, he called me after he got his first midterm return. He said, "The professor made a mistake in scoring." I said, "Oh, that's easy. Just make an appointment with the professor and ask why you lost points." My son said, "No, that's not the problem. My professor gave me too many points." We had lots of phone calls about his worries that he was cheating in some way or another. He also felt a need to confess when he was not 100% honest in social conversations. He might return to one of his frat brothers after a conversation and say something like, "Well, I told you about the trip I took. I might have exaggerated, and I just wanted to clarify." He would regularly call me and offer apologies. I remember the day he called and said, "Hey, you remember that time when I was in middle school and you asked me to clean my room? I'm really sorry that I didn't do that." Around Thanksgiving, my son called me because he sent a friend a text hours ago and hadn't heard from him. He wanted my opinion about whether anything he said was mean or offensive. Well, it turns out that his friend was on an airplane at the time, and he texted after he landed. I started getting this tight feeling in my gut when my son wrestled with this inner conflict about who he was or how he interacted with others. I knew he could spend hours ruminating about his reputation. Something was happening. I just couldn't put my finger on what it was. He didn't seem depressed. He didn't seem to have anxiety or even ADHD, but I was worried. I also knew that I tended to overreact. So I tried to reassure myself that he was just mastering social skills he would have learned had he grown up with brothers and sisters. Then, one day, my son casually mentioned that he avoided a bridge on campus because he said that every time he goes over the bridge, he thinks about jumping. Now, he said it with the same casual tone he would use when he told me that he avoids a certain store because the lines are too long. I, however, was in a state of panic. I asked my son if he had any plans to end his life, and he reassured me that he did not. I went to pick him up so he would be safe, and then once he was with me, I made a plan for him to get a complete neuropsych exam. On the basis of the PET scan that was included in this evaluation, his doctors made the diagnosis of OCD. Well, I had a flood of feelings. The first was relief. This thing is real and it had a name. I felt hopeful. Now that my son had a diagnosis, there was treatment. I also had embarrassment and guilt and shame. What kind of mother and doctor was I that my son had been struggling for years and I had never considered the diagnosis of OCD? I was determined to do everything in my power to help my son. I bought books on OCD. I watched videos. I enrolled in courses. I researched OCD resources on his college campus. I learned what you most likely already know. OCD is a condition in which, for some unknown reason, the brain generates unwanted, deeply disturbing thoughts or images. These are the obsessions in OCD. These obsessions trigger high levels of uncomfortable feelings, and it's usually anxiety or sometimes disgust. Over time, people with OCD learn that they can get temporary relief from these feelings by taking actions known as compulsions. The problem is that each cycle of obsessions and compulsions makes it easier for the next cycle and the cycles after that. And these cycles can consume hours each day. Now, there are a number of different themes of obsessions. The most common, of course, are contamination and ordering themes, and my son's brain never went there. Harm is another theme. When my son told me he thought about jumping off the bridge, what he really meant was that his OCD monster that set up housekeeping in his brain offered him that specific obsession. My son's primary theme was moral OCD. That means that his OCD monster offers thoughts that my son is not a good person. My son would believe the OCD monster's suggestions that he was cheating or lying or being a bad person. His compulsions, including calling me for reassurances or making apologies. And as I said, he would spend hours each day with these obsessions and compulsions. One day he told me that he was going to vow off dating because it just triggered so many obsessions. Now, we all understand how precious a reputation is. You might feel uncomfortable being around somebody who falsely accused you of one crime or another. Now, imagine this mean person was there with you every day, pointing out lapses in your character. My son started letting me know the true impact OCD had on his life. Now, we had this suicide contract, but he told me that he did not know how much more of this pain he could bear. By that time, he'd been to 3 therapists, and none offered treatment that made things better. In fact, all 3 made things worse. One therapist who didn't understand harm OCD interpreted my son's obsessions about jumping off the bridge as a plan to end his life. So she diagnosed and tried to treat the depression that my son didn't have. One therapist offered treatment that works well with somebody with anxiety disorders, And while anxiety is part of the OCD picture, the treatment for anxiety often makes OCD worse. The very organization that diagnosed my son's OCD prescribed medications that didn't work. Further, they failed to offer a therapeutic technique called ERP, exposure and response prevention. This is the one evidence-based treatment I finally learned about through NOCD. And without a therapist or a healthcare professional who understood the unique challenges of OCD, I was my son's first responder and coach. My son and I would spend hours on the phone when he was in the grips of OCD. The problem was that I was not equipped to deal with this. I didn't know what to do. In fact, in retrospect, I said and did a lot of things that made OCD worse. And probably the most notable is that I tried to reason with the OCD monster. I thought I could talk my son out of the obsessions, but this was like trying to negotiate with a terrorist. I was scared. I was worried about what my son's future would look like. I grieved the loss of my vision of a healthy child launching into limitless adult possibilities. In my fantasy world, my son would find the perfect therapist who could help me too. So my son and I would go through these cycles. He would call me in crisis. I'd do my best with crisis intervention and ended the call by extracting a promise that my son would make the calls looking for another therapist. But by the time morning came around, my son was convinced that there was nothing wrong. He wouldn't make the promise calls. He thought that this whole OCD thing was just made up. I was angry that OCD was so misunderstood by so many healthcare professionals. I was frustrated that I couldn't find coaching for parents like myself. We were our kids' first responders. We are their cheerleaders and their coaches. Yet, there were few resources for parents of adult children like me. I felt alone and defeated. I also knew that I would do anything I could to help my son. So I was looking for outside of the box ideas. Some of my physician friends were certified life coaches. The goal of life coaching is to learn more about how your human brain works and then actively manage your brain so you get the kinds of results you want in life. Out of desperation, I enrolled in the Life Coach Certification Program. At least I would be better equipped to coach my son and coach myself. The skills and tools I learned as a life coach transformed my life. I shifted my relationship with myself and my son and with OCD. I'm pleased to report that my son is really mastering the skills to manage his own brain. So now I'm feeling more hopeful. I'm feeling more optimistic about my son's future. All right, so I just told you about all of the feelings I've experienced over the past decade. You might have experienced some of these yourself. Maybe relief or hopefulness or hopelessness. Maybe anger and fear or sadness and grief or disbelief, denial, and maybe defeat. Maybe you felt embarrassment or guilt or shame. Maybe you have worries about the future. Maybe you have regrets. Maybe you feel isolated. You approach your days with a sense of dread. You might feel overwhelmed or confused. All of these feelings are common. If you've had any or all of them, you are completely normal. All right, so here is the major lesson I learned as I became a certified life coach. You might think that your circumstances, in this situation, the diagnosis of OCD, cause your feelings. When we face circumstances we don't like, we have a human tendency to rebel. So I've heard things like, this isn't fair, my child shouldn't have to deal with OCD, or the doctor is wrong, or this must be a mistake. I remember one parent saying, hey, my child eats healthy organic foods, this can't be. Well, I'm going to suggest to you that your thoughts about your circumstances, not the circumstances themselves, create your feelings. Then your feelings shape your actions, and your actions contribute to your results. Sometimes the thoughts that lead to your feelings are below the level of conscious thought, and that's usually why it seems like the circumstances create your feelings. All right, you cannot control your circumstances. If OCD is part of your life, it's in your life. This is a chronic condition that can be managed sort of like diabetes. However, you can control everything else. You can choose which thoughts to think, which then shape your feelings that contribute to the actions that create the results you experience. Some thoughts help you be freed from OCD. Other thoughts keep you imprisoned by OCD. Now let's get real. Managing OCD is hard. This might be the single biggest challenge you or somebody you love face in life. Some thoughts make it easier to be freed from OCD, and other thoughts give more power to the OCD. Since this is already so hard, doesn't it make sense to choose thoughts strategically? And how do you do that? Well, as a life coach, I've learned a self-coaching tool to manage my brain and make conscious choices about my thoughts. We call it the Freedom Formula, or the Formula for short. And let me just give you a little taste. Here's what I do on a daily basis. I identify a place in my life in which I'm feeling stuck. Then I write down the conversation I'm having in my head. Once it's down on paper, I can untangle the story. I can pluck out one thought or feeling to explore. So let me give you an example. Early on, I had many days when I struggled with guilt and shame. So the conversation in my head went something like this. I'm such a bad mom and a bad doctor. My son told me about that voice in his head telling him what to do back in high school. A good mom would have seen this for what it was. Maybe it's the earliest clue about OCD. But then it took 4 more years of my son's suffering before the diagnosis was finally made. So my brain wants me to believe that I've just described the factual circumstances. However, once it's down on paper, I can separate the circumstances from my thoughts. The circumstances are the observable facts upon which we can all agree. So here are the circumstances in this story. When my son was in high school, he told me about hearing a voice in his head telling him to do a specific thing. I shared this with his pediatrician, who reassured me that my son was most likely just witnessing his brain in a new way. In retrospect, this may or may not have been a clue about my son's OCD diagnosis made 4 years later. Okay, so I plucked out the thought that I wanted to explore. I'm a bad mom. When I think I'm a bad mom, I feel guilt. And when I feel guilt, I usually withdraw. I don't explore resources. I disengage from my son. So I'm not doing the thing that dedicated mothers do to help their kids. So the thought I'm a bad mom creates the experience of being what my brain defines as a bad mom. The thought I'm a bad mom is not a fact, even though my brain wants to tell me it is true. No one would convict me in a court of law of being a bad mom. That's my interpretation of the circumstances. But this thought is optional. I could choose to practice and believe a different thought. I'm a devoted mom who does everything in her power to help her son. When I think that thought, I feel hopeful and determined. And with those feelings, I keep on going until I find something that works. As a result, I can go to bed at night knowing I did everything in my power to help my son. So simply choosing and challenging a thought can radically transform the experience of going about your days and getting the results in life. So let me show you an example about how this coaching tool has helped me help my son. My son has a goal of deadlifting 600 pounds. So there's a bar on the ground with 600 pounds and he picks it up and assumes an upright position. He's really serious about this. He's hired a coach and he has a workout plan. Well, a couple of months back, there was a week in which my son told me several times, "I'm getting weaker." He believed he was telling me the facts. So we built out a model. I asked him to specifically describe what was going on in the gym. So the week prior to that, he was able to do 4 repetitions of 500 pounds. But in this past week, he could only do 4 repetitions of a maximum weight of about 425 pounds. So his thought was, "I'm getting weaker." And when he thinks this thought, he feels defeated. And when he's feeling defeated, he's less likely to push his body to go beyond what his brain believes to be his limits. The result is that his maximum weight goes down. Now, I reminded my son that high-performance athletes visualize success, and he, in essence, had spent the last week visualizing failure. He agreed to swap the thought, "I'm getting weaker," to the thought, "I'm on my way to a 600-pound deadlift." He agreed to practice this thought for a week, and it's probably not going to be any surprise to you that he improved his numbers. All right, well, then I got curious. I asked my son what he thought was different in that week when he thought he was getting weaker. Was he cutting back on his sleep? Was he skipping meals? Was he dehydrated? And then my son made his confession. At the end of his repetitions, his OCD monster would say, "You cheated." So that was his circumstance. My son's thought was, "I'm not a cheater. I'll show you." He was angry and determined. He trained every day that week. He did all of his assigned repetitions twice. So he stressed his muscles well beyond the protocol and then deprived his muscles of the recovery time that's so essential to growth. No wonder his maximum weight went down. Now, you might notice that my son was very concerned when he was getting weaker, yet he never mentioned his OCD monster's accusations. This obsession was really the thing that was keeping him from getting what he wanted. But it wasn't part of the conversation about getting what he wanted. So the presence of an obsession is a circumstance. My son will most likely always have the OCD monster offering these bullying, mean thoughts. However, everything else is optional. My son can choose the thoughts he has when the obsessions pop into his head. The week before, he took the bait from the OCD monster. He gave his power to the OCD monster. Then we discussed other choices. He could choose a different thought he would practice when his OCD monster accused him of cheating. He could think, "I'm listening to my coach who tells me not to overtrain." Well, it's not easy to say no to the OCD monster. The OCD monster will take it up a notch. You know, he might say even meaner things like, "Cheater, cheater, it doesn't matter if you cheat. You'll never get to the 600-pound deadlift anyway." My son anticipated the anxiety he would feel when he defied the OCD monster. He also knew that he'd feel a strong urge to give in. But through his experience with ERP, he also knew that he could live through anxiety. His anxiety was not something to be feared. So he decided in advance, even before he got into the gym, that he would say no to the OCD monster. He would feel the anxiety, and still he was going to resist the urge and follow the protocol. And that's exactly what he did. So just to be clear, the self-coaching model is not a substitute for therapy. It's an adjunct that can help you understand your brain more effectively, whether you are the person with OCD or you love somebody with OCD. It helps you treat yourself with more compassion and make it more likely that you're able to get the results that you want. So just to summarize, you may have many different feelings about OCD. These are all normal human reactions. Your thoughts about your OCD, not the presence of OCD, create your feelings. Now, you will have a natural human desire to fight against unwanted circumstances. However, your circumstances are outside of your control. So radical acceptance is the best path towards being freed from OCD. You can choose and practice the thoughts that create the feelings that inspire the actions to be freed from OCD. Now, I can tell you, I've had many days when I fought against OCD. I had thoughts like, OCD is a curse. I've never had anything good come from that thought. So I decided to intentionally choose another thought. OCD is a blessing. The skills that contribute to managing OCD, like witnessing and choosing your thoughts, and feeling your feelings and resisting urges, are life skills that support life success. Part of the value of being a member of the OCD Haven is that we offer coaching for your own thought work. Sometimes you get stuck because the thing you need to see is hidden in your blind spot. It's always great to have somebody else shine a light there. So there you go. Lots of thoughts about feelings that accompany the diagnosis with OCD. I hope that you find this helpful. I hope that you give this self-coaching tool a try. But let me leave you with one final thought. Many families touched by OCD feel alone in their struggles. If you found this information helpful, please feel welcome to share it with friends and family and communities in which you participate. Please leave a review of the podcast. That makes it easier for people who need this message to find it. So let's get this message out there that people struggling with OCD are not alone. There is hope. Thank you again for your investment in your family and yourself. You got this.